Hey everyone, it's so good to have you with us today. I was thinking about something earlier that I think is going to hit home for a lot of people. Have you ever felt like you were just drowning in someone else's drama? Like you're at a cafe and two acquaintances start this massive argument, and suddenly your heart is racing, your palms are sweaty, and you feel just as stressed as they do?
Oh, for sure. It's that feeling where you aren't just a witness, you're basically a sponge. You're soaking up all that toxicity, and it starts to feel like your own.
Exactly. And that's why we're talking about the art of detachment today. But here's the thing that really surprised me. Detachment isn't about being cold or becoming a robot. It's actually a healthy skill that empowers you to engage more intentionally in your life.
Right. It's not about checking out or going numb. Healthy detachment is more like a protective barrier. It stops external negativity from hijacking your peace, while still allowing you to be empathetic. Think of it as a way to maintain your sense of self, no matter what's happening around you.
I love that. It's about caring without becoming unhealthily enmeshed. And research actually shows that this kind of psychological detachment, especially from work stressors, is a massive driver of overall well-being.
It really is. When you can mentally disconnect, you're not just saving your sanity. You're actually rebuilding your internal resources. So if you've been feeling drained or like you're carrying the weight of the world on your shoulders, this is for you. We're going to look at how to build those boundaries and why it's actually one of the most compassionate things you can do for yourself.
So let's dive into what this actually looks like in practice, because I think the how is where it gets really interesting.
You know, Lena, a lot of people struggle with this because they think if they stop feeling everything someone else feels, they're being selfish. But there's a massive distinction between being attached and being enmeshed.
That word enmeshed sounds so tangled. What does it actually mean in a relationship?
It's when your boundaries basically dissolve. Your identity becomes so wrapped up in someone else that you can't tell where you end and they begin. It's like you're trying to buy bread and milk at a hardware store. You're looking for an emotional return from a place that just can't give it to you.
That's a great analogy. So if emotional attachment is about closeness and safety, detachment is about recentering your energy on yourself instead of trying to control others.
Precisely. And we do this because our emotional bandwidth is actually limited. We have a finite amount of energy. And if we're investing it in bad investments, like toxic people or situations that give nothing back, we end up emotionally exhausted.
It's like a bank account. If you keep withdrawing energy and nothing ever gets deposited back, you're going to hit zero pretty fast. And that leads to those physical signs we sometimes ignore, like insomnia, racing thoughts, or just that lingering sense of dread when a certain person's name pops up on your phone.
Those are the warning signs. Your body is reading that toxicity as a threat, a literal fight or flight response. Detachment is the process of withdrawing that emotional energy so you can redirect it somewhere healthy.
It's interesting how it's not an on or off switch either. I read that we should think of it more like a dial.
I love that framing. Instead of I'm either all in or I'm cutting you off forever, you adjust the dial from 0 to 5 based on how that person treats you. If they're only giving you a level 1 investment, you dial your own investment down to a 1 to match. It keeps you from over-attaching to people before you really know them.
So if we're turning down the dial, how do we handle those moments when we're right in the middle of a trigger? Like someone says something passive-aggressive and you can feel that heat rising in your chest.
That's the reaction gap. Emotional detachment flourishes in that tiny space between the trigger and your response. When you're triggered, your breathing usually gets shallow, which tells your brain to stay in stress mode.
So the simple act of slowing down your breath actually signals your brain to relax.
It really does. It lowers the heart rate and stabilizes stress hormones. It's about becoming a witness to your emotions rather than being managed by them. You might still feel the annoyance or the sadness, but you're observing it from a distance, like watching a storm from a sturdy house on the shore.
That's such a grounding image. And it ties into mindfulness, right? Just noticing the thought without judgment. I found that even just labeling it helps, like saying to yourself, okay, I'm noticing I feel really defensive right now.
Exactly. It creates that pause where you can choose a response instead of just reacting. When we react instantly, we usually end up with regrets,
But when we respond, we've taken a second to think about what's actually healthy for us.
It's almost like quiet quitting a toxic dynamic. You don't have to make a big announcement or have a confrontation. You just quietly step back from the stress. You stop taking the bait when they try to trigger you.
And that's so powerful, because you're reclaiming your agency. You're deciding that your peace is more important than being right or winning an argument. It's not about being rude. It's about realizing that their behavior is 99.9% about them and has almost nothing to do with you.
Once you see that, the sting of their comments really starts to fade. You stop feeling responsible for their actions or their moods.
Here's something that trips a lot of people up, though. Even when we know someone is toxic, our minds do these weird tricks to keep us hooked. It's called cognitive reframing, and we have to use it to our advantage.
Oh, I know those tricks. You leave a bad situation, and suddenly you're only remembering the 3 good days you had in 2 years.
Right. Your mind says, maybe I overreacted, or they're only human, I should have stayed. To detach, you have to intentionally counter those thoughts. You have to force yourself to remember the bad things too. Not to be bitter, but to see the reality of the situation clearly.
It's like closing the gap between where you are and where you need to be. I read about a technique where you ask yourself, what would my life look like 5 years from now if I keep tolerating this?
That's a heavy question, but it's so effective. When the perceived pain of staying becomes greater than love in a relationship, your brain finally activates those detaching forces. It's about increasing the perceived pain of the unhealthy relationship until you're motivated to protect yourself.
It also helps to deal with unfinished business. Have you heard of the Zeigarnik effect?
Is that the one where we can't stop thinking about open loops or things that aren't resolved?
Exactly. If you have a problem at work or a fight that didn't end, your brain keeps it open and keeps chewing on it. To detach, you have to find a way to close that loop. For work, that might mean making a concrete plan for the next morning before you leave the office. Once there's a plan, the brain feels like it can let go.
That makes so much sense. It's about giving the mind permission to rest. And if it's a person, maybe that closing the loop is just making a plan to approach this person. You stop waiting for a response that might never come.
It's about accepting the reality as it is, rather than struggling against it. That doesn't mean you like it. It just means you aren't wasting energy trying to change something you can't control.
When you finally do detach from a big source of stress, like a long-term relationship or a job you've had for years, you might feel a little fragmented.
I can imagine. If your identity was tied to being the person who handles everything or the supportive partner to a difficult person, who are you once you stop doing that?
That's where the identity work comes in. Emotional energy doesn't just disappear. It seeks a new place to go. If you've freed up all that bandwidth from a toxic situation, you need to deliberately reinvest it in yourself, your hobbies, your own health, or your other healthy relationships.
I love the idea of loving from afar, especially with family members where you can't or don't want to cut ties completely. You can still hold them in your heart, but you don't let them into your inner circle. You maintain that distance that's mentally and emotionally safe for you.
It's about being less accessible. You don't respond to texts as quickly. You don't get together as often. You move them from that inner circle to more of an acquaintance. And it's okay to grieve that change. You're allowed to be sad that it couldn't be what you wanted it to be.
That's a really compassionate point. Grieving is part of the process. If you deny the sadness, it just stays in your head longer. You have to feel it to let it go.
And once you do, you start to notice these incredible benefits. Research shows that people who can psychologically detach from work stressors actually report higher levels of happiness and life satisfaction. It's not just a theory, it's a measurable improvement in your quality of life.
It's like you're finally clearing out the emotional clutter so you can actually breathe again.
We've talked a lot about the mental side, but sometimes detachment needs a physical component too, especially after a breakup or leaving a toxic workplace. Out of sight, out of mind is actually a legitimate strategy.
So removing those visual reminders, like photos or social media connections, is actually a way to help your brain stop thinking about them.
Exactly. What you see is what you think about, and what you think about is what you stay attached to.
By creating physical distance, you're making it easier for your brain to achieve that emotional distance.
It's also about setting firm boundaries in your daily interactions, like saying, I need a moment to clear my head, and then we can continue, if a conversation starts getting toxic. That one sentence can completely change the dynamic.
I love that. It's a way to love yourself and the other person simultaneously, by setting the distance at which you can both exist safely. And it doesn't have to be done in anger. You can be calm and firm.
It's also important to have a healthy outlet to process those feelings as they come up. For some people, it's yoga or a long walk. For others, it's journaling, just dumping all those thoughts onto a page to free up that emotional bandwidth.
Journaling is so cathartic. It's like drawing out a splinter. It might be painful in the moment, but it's what allows the healing to finally start. And as you practice this, you'll find you're becoming more resilient. You aren't as prone to burnout because you aren't letting everyone else's fire burn in your backyard.
You're becoming the manager of your own energy. Instead of being controlled by your environment, you're acting in ways that align with your own values.
So for everyone listening who's ready to try this, where do we start? I think the first step is just awareness, recognizing the signs of toxicity, the racing thoughts, the dread, the feeling of being drained.
Right. And once you see it, try that slowing down technique. When you're triggered, take 3 deliberate slow breaths. Use that pause to ask yourself, is this my burden to carry?
Then look at your dial. Are you overinvesting in someone who isn't giving anything back? Try dialing it down just one notch this week. Be a little less accessible or limit your conversations to light, neutral topics.
And don't forget the hardware store rule. Stop going to people for things they've shown they can't provide. If you stop expecting them to be different, you stop being disappointed when they stay the same.
That's huge. Also, find your container. When you're dealing with a toxic coworker, for example, mentally put them in a box. Your interaction stays strictly about work responsibilities, and you don't give them any energy or attention outside of that.
And be patient with yourself. You won't do this perfectly every time. You're going to get triggered and you might fall back into old patterns. That's okay. Self-compassion is a key part of this. Forgive yourself and then just take the next right step.
Exactly. It's a practice, not a one-time achievement. Every time you choose to step back and breathe instead of lashing out, you're building that detachment muscle. You're teaching yourself that your peace is worth protecting.
It's really about choosing freedom over control. You're releasing the need to control others' reactions or the outcome of every situation.
As we bring this to a close, I want to leave you with a thought. Successful detachment doesn't look like you're constantly telling people, I don't care. In fact, if you're constantly talking about how much you don't care, it usually means you're still very emotionally invested.
Oh, that's so true. Pretending takes energy. True detachment is when you really don't feel the need to talk about it anymore.
Right. When you can talk about that person or situation as if it's just any other casual random thing, dispassionately, that's when you know you've truly detached. You aren't pushing the feelings away anymore. They just don't have a hook in you anymore.
It's such a powerful place to be. It's not about becoming indifferent to the world. It's about being discerning. It's knowing who is able to nurture a growth-oriented relationship and who isn't.
And for those who aren't, you give yourself permission to walk away, physically or emotionally, to claim your inner calm. You don't have to carry everyone's burden.
Thank you all so much for spending this time with us. It's a heavy topic, but I hope you're walking away feeling a little lighter, a little more empowered to protect your own energy.
Take a moment today to think about one relationship or situation where you can try dialing down your investment. Just one small step toward your own peace.
We'll leave you with that reflection. Take care of yourselves out there.